Howdy-do, Who fans, and welcome to the Big Blue Box Podcast. This is Gary.
And this is Adam.
And welcome to episode 204.
Have you ever thought what it's like to be wanderers in the fourth dimension?
Nobody in the universe can do what we're doing.
I've reversed the polarity of the neutron flow, so the TARDIS should be free of the force field now.
There's no point in being grown up if you can't be childish sometimes.
The trouble with time travel is one never seems to find the time.
Change, my dear. And it seems on a moment too soon.
Unlimited rice pudding, etc., etc.
I am the Doctor!
Great men are forged in fire. It is the privilege of lesser men to light the flame.
I'm the Doctor. This is Rose Tyler. She's my plus one. Is that all right?
That would be me.
Hello.
Surprise!
Boom! Etc.
I'm the Doctor. Do everything I tell you. Don't ask stupid questions. And don't wander off.
How can new kidneys? I don't like the colour.
It's so close.
Ah, brilliant. Where is she? So close.
By the time our listeners listen to this episode on Friday, just be a couple of days away.
I know.
Crazy.
I know. I'm so glad that we're into the final week, though. It's just so cool. Like, literally, I'm counting down the days. I hate to wish my life away, but I just said to you before we started recording, Sunday can't come soon enough for me. I can't wait to lock myself away, shut out the outside world, and put on the new series. It's going to be awesome.
It is going to be awesome, mate. And it is crazy because I just seems like a lifetime ago, you know, when we had the prospect of just no Doctor Who for so long. Once the moth was hoyed out on his ear,
yeah.
You know, we all thought, oh, it's going to be so long, but it, you know, it's come around like super quick.
It's done us good though, hasn't it? I've really liked the break. It's really built my anticipation levels up. So,
yeah.
I think it's been good to have this nice break.
It has for sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So welcome aboard, everybody. 2204. Glad to have you with us again. Waving to new listeners. We had a bunch of really some nice reviews again on iTunes. You guys just keep rolling with that. It's so cool. Thank you so much for the kind words. And yes, we will keep up doing the good work.
Mm.
As lots of you guys say. So,
and it does help us out. You always say this at the end, don't you? That it's hard to explain, but the more reviews we get, the more the podcast gets bumped up the list or whatever, isn't it? So it does help us out when we get reviews. So that's what we mean when we say that. It does make a difference to our, I don't really know how to explain it, but.
So the iTunes kind of algorithm for listing iTunes shows by, I don't know what it's like, not sort of popularity, but there's like a load of things that contribute into how far up the list you get seen. So when somebody does a search for Doctor Who podcast in iTunes, you know, how far up the list we are. It's all those things combined, you know, but the reviews part of it is certainly a big factor. So anyone that's left a review, not recently, but just ever, a big thumbs up, a big blue box thumbs up. It's awesome. So, yeah, so welcome aboard, new guys. Ancient, grizzled ancients who have been with us for years, welcome back.
I love that saying.
On today's show, we have a couple of news bits to go through, a couple of bits of merch, and then we are on to our review of The Tenth Planet. And we're also going to reveal the winners to our competition as well. So last week, very stupidly, which will not surprise any of you, we mentioned that we had a competition and we were going to tell you what it was. Then we forgot and did the show. And then, but there was, you did hopefully see the post that went out. Also on Friday last week. So awesome, everyone that entered that. So thank you so much for sending in your answers. Loads of you over Twitter, Facebook and email and so on. So that's really cool. So we'll announce the two winners after the news and merch. Yes, if we remember.
I bet people think it was just a ploy to get people to listen right to the very end. Because we mentioned it, didn't we, at the beginning. Like, oh, there's a competition coming up.
Yeah.
Completely forgot. But people were listening going, when's this blimmin' competition coming up?
Absolutely. And it wasn't a case of, it just wasn't very well planned either, because we got the soundtrack through from Silver Screen on that morning. And I said to Adam before we kicked off, like, we've got these soundtracks though, so we'll do the competition. And it just, yeah, completely went out the window. Like I said, it will surprise none of you. Our memories are terrible. So
yeah, we didn't realise for ages either, because if we'd have realised sort of, you know, if we'd sort of finished the show and then we normally have a chat and then stop, we could have inserted a little clip, but we didn't realise till ages afterwards. I can't even think what jogged up my memory. Something came up on Twitter and I suddenly thought, hang on a minute. We never did. So I texted you, didn't I? I was like, we never did the comp. And you were like, oh, no.
It was just hours afterwards, wasn't it?
It just went by. Yeah. It won't surprise our regular listeners. They know what our memories are like.
They do, yeah.
Yeah.
Terrible.
Just brains in jars, we are.
Exactly, yeah. Just terrible with remembering important stuff and names. Names of people who we've chatted to at conventions.
Hmm.
Names of actors in the episodes that we're reviewing.
Character names are the big one that get me. Can never remember anybody, any character name.
Yep. And competitions, obviously. But there we go. We got through it.
But we did get quite a few entries. So one of you lucky people will win.
Two of you lucky people will win. So talking of Silver Screen, a very big thank you to those guys, because, I just contacted them and said, look, I'm not being funny, but you haven't given us anything for a while for a comp. Do you want to perhaps pull your finger out? And the very nice lady was like, yeah, sure. What do you want? What do you want? Tell me and I'll send it to you.
I said, one of everything. Give me everything.
I said, well, a couple of copies of the Five Doctors soundtrack wouldn't be amiss.
Mm.
A little bit of Lolly. Come on.
Mm.
Yeah. So a few days later, they dropped through. So very kind. So thank you very much, Silver Screen. Very, very cool.
Yeah.
So we'll come on to that in a minute. How have you been, buddy? You've been on your travels, haven't you?
I have, and I was actually listening to the Five Doctors soundtrack while I was away. I just popped over. It's funny because I had it quite loud as well. I bet you know how like your headphones aren't very soundproof. So, but everyone on the train was like, what is he listening to over there? It sounds mad. I was listening to that. I just popped over to Brussels for a day or two. And no Doctor Who locations over there. I'm sorry to report. but just popped over there, bought some chocolate, come back. And I haven't really been doing much else. I bought the new Radio Times because it's got a lovely photo of our new Doctor on the front of this week's Radio Times. It's really nice, actually. It's got a sort of a Captain Scarlet vibe to it, isn't it? It's like a pure white background, and it's got this circular, as I said, looks like Captain Scarlet type emblem, would you call it? And then Jodie stood in the front of it. So a very simplistic cover, but boy, I love it. It really, really works. And there's a couple of TV listing magazines, and they all had Doctor Who on the front cover as well. So that was quite nice. It's just really cool to walk into a shop and see Doctor Who so prominent on the magazine covers again. Because, that has died off, I think, over the last few years. I know the Radio Times are pretty good. They quite often do Doctor Who covers, and they certainly did with the Capaldi era, so that was good. But it was good to see other TV listing magazines that don't normally, that, you know, they might normally have a tiny little picture in the bottom right-hand corner, but this time they're, you know, full cover of Jodie on the front. So it was very cool to walk into the news agents and see it everywhere, so that was good. So I picked up a couple of them, and the only other thing that's happened this week is that the replacement discs for the Series 12 Blu-ray finally arrived. You know, the Fourth Doctor Blu-ray, when it was released, two of the discs had faults on them, audio faults and misspelling of names and things on credits. So they corrected them. They've taken quite a while to rectify them, but I didn't really mind as long as they actually put them right. And it seems they have. The only thing is they were sent, the way they were sent, just... Well, I guess it shouldn't surprise me, really. But it was a bit disappointing, you know, you wait all this time to get these replacement discs for what is a lovely set. And it really is. I can't remember if you've got it, have you?
Yes, yeah.
You got it. So did you get your replacement disc as well?
I did, yes.
Yeah. And were yours like mine, just sent loose in a box, rattling around?
Yeah.
And, you know, mine's got quite a few scuffs on them, fingerprints as well. I hate it when you get a new Blu-ray that's got fingerprints on. I just don't, yeah. So I wasn't very impressed with how they were sent, but, you know, I'm sure they'll play okay. And it was nice to get them, and, you know, so I can put them in the set and have it finally sort of complete, if you like. But that's the only thing. I mean, I haven't had a chance to check them yet. I'm assuming they are correct this time, because there's been a bit of a kerfuffle with them, hasn't they? I think they started to send them out and then realized they were sending out faulty discs again, and you know, but I think these ones are correct. I haven't heard anything on Twitter or anything that they're not, so I haven't had time to check mine yet. I don't know about you.
Yes, I can confirm.
You can confirm
that they are fixed.
Good.
Yes,
good. Well, yours a bit scuffed as well. I was really, because I've got a thing about
here we go.
One of my pet hates is if a disc is rattling in the case. I mean, these weren't even sent in a case; they were literally thrown in a cardboard envelope, and that was it.
Yeah.
No protection at all. So, but yeah, it's one of my pet hates is if you pick up a DVD, you can hear the disc rattling inside, then you open it, and it's got scratches on it. No.
Yeah, mine didn't have any scratches. There were a few marks and scuffs, but they came out after I gave it a little wipe. Yeah. Cool. Same for me, mate. Yeah, I got my replacement discs through, which is good. Because the thing is with the, and there was a couple of people that tweeted me back because I stuck a picture of them on the socials, and a couple of people said, oh, I still haven't had anything back yet. Did you get a reply from the BBC? And just want to confirm, because we did go through this weeks ago when we gave people the address to email to get your replacement discs. The BBC won't email you back at all.
No, they don't. They don't.
Yeah, you'll get like an automated reply, something like, yeah, we've got your email or whatever. But they won't email you again to say your discs have been dispatched or anything like that. They'll just randomly turn up in the post at some point. So hopefully anyone that did request them, you should be getting them through any day now, hopefully. I don't know what the BBC's dispatch stuff is like from whatever department, but yeah. And there was one guy, I forgot who it was, we were talking on Twitter, and they got like three copies, you know, three lots of discs through or something.
Oh yeah, that's right, yeah.
So that's kind
I saw
cool.
that, yeah, yeah. I can't think who that was now, yeah. Just waited all that time and then got sent loads. But
yeah,
because mine arrived a couple of days after you, so I think it will... Yeah, they are sort of slowly getting them out there. So
yes,
if you're still waiting, it should be soon.
It should be. Yeah, just a couple of people said, oh, I haven't got my email confirmation yet. But you won't. You won't get anything on email. Just
no.
You know, sit tight and watch some Who. And they'll be through before you know it.
Yeah.
I watched a TV movie, mate.
Oh, did you?
Stuck it on.
Mr. McGann.
Yeah.
I always get quite defensive with the TV movie. I don't know about you, because I know quite a few people who don't like it. And I always try and respect other people's opinion. I never try and force mine onto other people. But something about the TV movie, when people start saying they don't like it, a piece of me sort of starts to get all wound up. Because it's not perfect, but I just think there's so much in there that is really good. Like the beautiful console, and it's not bad. I don't know why some people hate it. I know one of my good friends, you know, Liv from the Who Addict, she can't bear it.
Oh yeah.
And every time I try not to bring it up in conversation, because I'm just like, no, Liv, it's no, please give it another go. It's I like it anyway. You like it as well, obviously. That's why you were watching it.
Yes, I really like it. I really do like it. And that's the thing with the TV movie. You know it's not perfect, and you know it's got certain things about it that are maybe a bit, you can see why people don't like it.
Yeah.
But it's got a lot going for it. I think you just have to look past the, and this is no dig at our American friends and listeners, but you have to get past the sort of Americanized feel of it. And I don't mean that in a negative way at all, but it's got that sort of early 90s. American sitcom-y style feel, if you like.
It's got a different feel to it, for sure. Yeah, I know what you mean.
Yeah, you have to look past that. But the shining star, obviously, is McGann's performance. He's just, amazing.
And the music. I love the music
soundtrack,
in it.
Yeah.
Yeah, awesome. Such a great soundtrack in that.
Brilliant. It really is great, yeah.
I found myself doing that a lot recently as well, going, brilliant. It's really cool. Got in my head. Yeah. I've also found myself wandering around the house going, I feel glorious. And I'm like, oh, stop it. All these new show things are getting stuck in my head already.
Gives you earworm, I know. Ah, so that's been us, I guess. Should we land it and see what's kicking around?
Okay.
So we recently had the series confirmed as a move to Sunday evenings, which is all good. But now we have the time slot confirmed too, for the UK anyway. So in the UK, we'll go out at 6:45 until 7:45 on BBC One. So this will fall in between a programme called Country File and the results show for Strictly Come Dancing.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Country File, don't knock them. They're bringing in 4 to 6 million viewers.
Are they?
Regularly, yeah.
Mm. I used to watch it, actually. I used to watch Country File when John Craven was on it. But somewhere along the line, I lost interest. But anyway. 4 to 6 million.
Yes. So this obviously had to come before Strictly.
Yeah.
It couldn't have. I think Strictly finishes at what? 9 o'clock? Half
probably
nine, something
never
like that.
Watch it, but yeah.
And we had this before, didn't we? What series was it where they put Doctor Who on fairly
series,
late in the
series
year?
10, wasn't it? Wasn't it series 10 where some of them, or it might be series 9, but some of them were really late.
Yeah.
And it was because of Strictly, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think that's a good move, especially for younger viewers. Because Sunday night, obviously, a lot of parents will be saying, right, got school tomorrow, can't stay up too late, so off you go. So if we put it on before Strictly and we have it at 6:45, that's perfect sort of viewing time for, you know, younger viewers as well. So that's all good. And we've already been told that it will be a simulcast across, you know, sort of mostly globally, if you like. So our friends in America and Canada and whatever, they will get it broadcast exactly the same time as us, but just at their local time. So in America, for example, they'll get it at 1:45 in the afternoon, 1:45. So yeah, that's so for us, it's like post Sunday dinner, sofa, cup of tea sort of vibe.
I must admit, I'm very happy with that time slot, mate. Just before it was confirmed, I think a few little time slots from other countries have been leaked, so people were able to work out, because it's going to simultaneously air. People were saying, oh, well, that means it will be like 5:15 in the UK. And I was thinking, oh, no, that's just a bit too early. I really wanted it to be 7 o'clock. I thought 7 o'clock on a Sunday is a good time. 6:45, yes, I'm happy with that personally. I think it's good. It's I think anything before that, I think even 6 o'clock, you know, I think it's just a little bit too early. I think 6:45, like you said, dinner's on the table, whatever. It's just a nice sort of early evening time slot. So personally, I'm quite happy with that, and I'm very happy it's on Sunday, because I've just realised that I'm out this Saturday, and it's a birthday party that I wouldn't have been able to get out of. And I, if Doctor Who had been on this Saturday, and I was, you know, you can't say to a friend, I can't come to your birthday because I'm watching Doctor Who, can you? So I might have had to pretend to be ill or something, but I would have been horrified if I was missing it. So I'm quite happy with the Sunday time slot as well, I must admit.
It's cool, yeah. And some competition that's being offered up by the rival channels here in the UK. Over on ITV, there will be a game show on at the same time called Five Gold Rings, presented by Philip Schofield. I don't think I've got anything too much to worry there.
No.
BBC Two will be showing King Arthur's Britain, The Truth Unearthed, which is a documentary about the historical period of the legends of King Arthur.
Boring.
And Channel 4 viewers can enjoy Phil Spencer's Stately Homes.
Oh, my goodness, mate. There is no choice. Come on, guys. There's no competition.
Yeah.
Get so Doctor Who on. Yeah.
I don't think we're in too much danger, so to speak. But yeah, it will be interesting to see. The first episode of any new series of Doctor Who always does relatively well in terms of ratings, purely because a lot of people are alongside sort of regular Who fans that will watch it anyway, there's a lot of interest in it because it would have been marketed recently. And we've seen a lot of billboards. That's what I was going to say to you. You got your billboards, mate. You said
yes,
you love a billboard.
I know, another prediction. Yeah, I love a billboard. Yeah.
So they've been littered around.
That's good.
And obviously, it's like you said, if you go into a newsagent, it's across all of, you know, a lot of magazines at the moment, and we've had trailers and all that stuff. So yeah, there'll be a lot of people who aren't necessarily, you know, hardcore fans who will watch it anyway, but a lot of public interest. So there we go. Sunday evenings in the UK, 6:45. You'll have to check in your country where, at what time it's going out for you, but they are trying to get it broadcast at the same time globally. So it might be on earlier or later for you. So just have a check.
Mm, talking of that, actually, the time for Canada, which is about, you like Canada, don't you? You like going to Canada?
I'm going there soon, yeah.
You're going there soon. So when you're in Canada, Gary, the channel Space, or Space Canada, they've confirmed that they'll be joining in the simulcast broadcasting of the first episode. And it'll be going out at 1:45 p.m. Eastern European time. And then after that, it'll go to its regular 8 p.m. slot. So when you're in Canada in a couple of weeks, it'll be on at 8 p.m. over there. That's a good time as well, isn't it? 8 p.m.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Space is a really cool channel as well.
You've mentioned them a few times, haven't you? Yeah.
Yeah. So anyone that doesn't know, when I was in Canada a couple of years ago, they did a really cool sort of Doctor Who marathon in the run-up to Series 10. Yeah. And they did it all the way from Eccleston through to, so they timed it so that when the last episode of Series 9 finished, it was literally just before the live showing of the first episode of Series 10. So it was very cool. So when I was in Canada, I was more than happy to just, you know, get comfy on the bed in the hotel room and what, you know, come on, we're going out. Oh, what? So yeah, Space is a very cool channel, and I'm not sure if they're going to do it this time, but in previous series of Doctor Who, they normally have this program on afterwards where they sort of go through the story and they review it and have a laugh and stuff. So I'm not sure if they can do that, but yeah, Space in Canada and BBC America, 1:45 in the afternoon, and then they'll repeat it at 8 p.m. as well.
Now, it makes me wonder, actually. We used to get like the Doctor Who Confidential, didn't we? Which used to love that. And then later on, it went to the fan show and things. But I wonder if we'll get any little behind the scenes nuggets on. Maybe they'll put them on the BBC YouTube channel or something, the Doctor Who YouTube channel or something, because we don't have like BBC Three anymore, do we? Or maybe it'll be on Press Red Button or something. I don't know. I just wonder if we'll get any behind the scenes programs this time.
Possibly.
Somewhere, because we haven't heard anything about that. I was thinking more than ever, though, that I think a lot of people on this first episode, like, the, you know, we do worry about ratings and stuff, and I think this episode in particular is going to come under quite a lot of scrutiny from like the press and fans, isn't it, because of the ratings. So it'd be very interesting to see how this does, you know, because there's been so much said about, oh, it's moved to a Sunday, oh, what, Doctor Who's a Saturday show, and so that's going to be thing, and obviously, you know, Jodie's the Doctor, new Doctor, it's always, people have always got their eyes on it, so if it doesn't sort of get a particularly high rating, people are going to blame all these things, aren't they, you know, and I just think it'd be very interesting to see what that overnight rating is. I'm going to predict around 6 to 7 million, I think, that's what I would hope for, because that would be a decent sort of rating, I think, overnight, and then obviously a few more million are added on once they, you know, consolidate all the figures together. But I think overnight I'm going to predict 6 to 7 million for this, hopefully.
6 to 7.
Because the series had dipped to around 4, hadn't it?
Yeah.
And I think at one point it went even as low as 3 in the last series, I think. Did. So yeah. But I would hope for around that. I think what's the one that the bodyguard that the BBC they're absolutely, you'd think they've never had a hit show before. They're really pleased with themselves, aren't they? Because The Bodyguard got like 10 point something million. Which
that's right. Yeah.
Nowadays is, according to the BBC, is amazing. So if this gets around 6 or 7, I think we'll be in good territory. I think anything under 5 is a little bit disappointing for me personally, I think.
Yeah, I hope so. I really do. I'm going to go with you, mate. If we can get above 6 million, That'll be a good...
That'll be good.
A good opener, I would say.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, that's it for news. So all Series 11 related. Should we get our metal buddy in and see what he's banging on about?
Oh, yeah, go on then, get him in.
Merch Corner. Merch Corner. Merch Corner.
I don't know whether to be impressed or disgusted.
It's a bit rubbish, but it's pretty. It's very pretty.
The Fourth Doctor.
Sir Tom of Baker.
Of Baker.
Mm-hmm.
He's getting another audio story. Winging its way to us. Not from Big Finish, though.
No, although you might think so if you look to the cover. It looks very Big Finish, this cover.
It does, yeah.
It's a nice cover, actually. Yeah.
Yeah. So every now and then, the BBC will have a stab at doing audio stories. Some of them are not too bad.
Yeah.
But we have a new Fourth Doctor story called The Winged Coven, which is not out until next year. So April 2019, this one will land. But a bit of blurb for this. When the Doctor returns to Hexford, he discovers strange things afoot in the village woods, including the desiccated remains of some of the locals.
Mm.
It's down to him and Mrs. Wibsey, to investigate. So the new adventure is set after the events of the Nest Cottage Chronicles and The Thing from the Sea.
Yes.
What do you reckon?
Yeah, I quite like this because I got The Thing from the Sea and I really enjoyed it.
Okay.
And it was just a little sort of about 50-minute story from what I remember. So it's quite a contained little story. Hmm. But it did follow on from the events in the Nest Cottage Chronicles, which I'd never listened to. They were like, basically Tom Baker did them before he was persuaded to go to Big Finish. And they got a bit of a mixed response, so I'd never bothered with them. And I went back and got the box set really cheap off Amazon. And I started listening to it. And I must admit, I got about four stories in, I think. And I really enjoyed what I've heard so far. I mean, I haven't got round to finishing the sex. It's quite a big box set. I think it's about 14 discs in there. So I'm not even halfway through. But I remember, you know, fans were a little bit unsure about it at the time. So maybe it sort of tails off a bit, I don't know, but certainly what I've heard so far, I've really enjoyed. So it's got Mike Yates, what's the actor's name, Richard Franklin, in it as well.
Yeah.
And so yeah, I like it, so I'll actually probably get this. As I said, I really like the cover, but I enjoyed The Thing from the Sea, so if it's anything like that, and it's written by Paul Marks, who does quite a lot of Doctor Who, and he's normally pretty good, so yeah, so I should probably pick it up. We don't know who's reading this one But I think I'll probably get this. Yeah.
Yeah. And what do you reckon to Fenella Wibsey?
Fenella Wibsey?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, she's quite a cool character, actually, because she works very well with Tom, because she's an older sort of lady. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, there's something about the interaction between the two, which is quite fun. Yeah, because basically the Doctor's gone and set up home in a little cottage. And is investigating things. So it's a slightly different take on the Fourth Doctor, if you like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There we go. So April next year.
Yes. Land.
You can pre-order it from Amazon. Just do a search for Doctor Who, The Winged Coven, and you'll see it on there. It's a tenner. So not too bad.
Yeah, it's not too bad. As I said, they're definitely going down that sort of Big Finish style of cover, aren't they?
Yes.
Which is quite nice because it will blend in with your rest of your collection if you get it. Yeah. Right. What else has he got on that tray then? So, Eagle Moss, the Doctor Who figurine collection. they're still going. They were going to stop at, I think, issue 120, and they've decided to carry on. They're obviously doing quite well.
Yeah.
And issue 138 is going to be the 13th Doctor. Yay! So they're going to be a 13th Doctor figurine coming out. These normally retail about $8.99, I think. I tend to cherry pick these. So, because some of them are really good,
awesome,
and some of them are terrible. Like they did, well, not terrible, but they're certainly not great. So they've done some really good ones recently. I'm just trying to think what they were. They did the guy from Battlefield. I've forgotten his name. The one in chains. Anyway, we said we were terrible, but they've done some really good figures. And then recently, they did a Fourth Doctor in his burgundy costume, which looked absolutely dreadful. Nothing like him at all. But they can be really good. And I have to say, we've got a picture of the figurine itself. Looks quite good to me, actually. I mean, I'll definitely get it. I think it looks quite nice. It just, like anything, I guess these are hand-painted, so it's always good if you can find one in a shop, because this is the sort of figurine where if you get one that's, you know, got a bit of a dodgy paint apps on it, it's going to look terrible.
Yes.
Like, yep. I got the figurine of the Delgado Master, right? Now, it was a fairly simple paint job because he's just wearing a black suit, but the eyes on mine are just shocking. It looks like someone's just sort of dabbed in with a paintbrush roughly where an eye should be. So it just ruins the whole figure. If, you know, if you got a good paint job, he would have been a great figure. So I think the same will apply to this, because the picture we're looking at looks really good. Obviously, the paint apps are nice and clean and accurate.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, if you can find a good one of this, I think it's a really nice little figurine of the 13th Doctor. Yeah. But it's probably good if you can find one in the shop. And she's coming out in, when is it?
November 25th.
November the 25th, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's one of those things where it's definitely recommended to try and see one, you know, like in WH Smith or Forbidden Planet or something, so you can check the paint job for sure.
Yeah, actually, because they sometimes do big versions of the figurines as well. So they do like this standard magazine collection, and they're sort of about 3 or 4 inches, aren't they? But they sometimes do like the big version, a massive figurine. And they recently did the Minotaur.
That's right. Yep.
And I saw it come up to pre-order online, but I was thinking, nah, I'm not too bothered about that because I'm not a big fan of that story. So I didn't bother pre-ordering it. And then I was in Forbidden Planet and saw one on the shelf, and it looked so good. The actual thing looked really good, and I bought that. So, as I said, when they get it right, and if you can find one with a good paint job, because I did notice that some of them, his little horns had snapped off on a couple of them. I was thinking, yes, that's exactly why I didn't order it online, because I knew, like, when they did the Wirren a couple of months back, and that, you know, tiny little spindly legs, and I was thinking, yeah, that's going to arrive smashed. You know, so it is always good if you can find them in the shop, but they're not always easy to find, unfortunately. So
true.
Yeah. Yep. But so yeah, Forbidden Planet in London often have them. So
yeah, they've normally got quite a few in there.
Mm.
And so yeah, they can be a bit hit and miss sometimes. But as I mentioned recently, the little white Necros Dalek that I got is really nice.
I've got some. I've got a few of theirs, and some of them are great. Really, really nice. I wish the Destroyer, I think he's called, isn't he?
That's
a beautiful figurine from Battlefield. Did a really good job on that. Yeah.
Yeah.
So yes, I'll be getting this little 13th Doctor one if I can find one.
Nice.
You going to get it for your little shelf or not? Because you're having a clear out. Like, no, you're not getting it.
No. I think when I get finally get round to bagging the 13th Doctor Funko Pop.
Ah, yeah.
When that's finally out, wherever. I think that's going to be the last Funko Pop I'm going to buy, you know.
Really?
Yeah, I've just had enough of them, mate.
You say that. They'll probably release something you want.
Nah. Do you know what it is? A few years back, the Funko Pops were really sort of collectible, if that makes sense, in a way that there wasn't a million of them in every shop, on every stall, at every convention you go to. You know, were relatively sought after. But now, if you go into any geek shop or go to any convention, you cannot bloody move for freaking Funko Pops.
Do you know what? When I was in Belgium at the weekend, absolutely true story, Every little sort of geeky shop I could find, and there's quite a few out there actually, there's loads of little figure shops, every one I went into was wall-to-wall Funko Pops, and I'm not exaggerating when I say absolutely rammed full. One shop I went in, I could barely move through the shelves with my backpack on, because it was just wall-to-wall Funko Pop. I took some photos, I couldn't believe it. They were just everywhere.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah.
And I like them, don't get me wrong, they're cute, you know, cool little figures, but I think it's just oversaturated now. They're no longer collectibles. It's just, you know, are you going to get this Funko Pop? Yeah, I've already got it. Oh, of course you have. Yeah. You know, everyone you speak to has got Funko Pops. And
they're another one where if you get a dodgy paint out, like some of the eyes on them as well, they're not even in the right place. They're so mass produced, aren't they? I must admit, I would love the 13th Doctor one. I really wanted that. Yeah. And I'm starting to worry we're not going to get it, mate. I know FP have said, you know, they can't source it to the UK, so I don't know. But we'll see. Maybe it will go over here at some point.
Sad times.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's news and merch done. Time for our review. What we got this week, buddy?
Yeah, so, well, as we've got a regeneration story coming up with the Series 11, we thought we'd go back to where it all started in terms of regeneration. So it's the first Doctor's last story, The Tenth Planet.
We have three intruders.
Intruders? At the pole.
Can you tell us precisely where we are, please?
You're at the South Pole base of International Space Command, and frankly, Pop, your story's gonna have to be awful good.
Emergency! Emergency!
There's another planet out there.
I know what this planet is and what it means to Earth.
You turn up out of nowhere, a routine space shot goes wrong, a new planet appears, and you tell us you know all about it. That puts you slap bang on the hot seat.
Pretty soon, we should be having visitors.
Visitors? What, here? Come over here, quick!
Who do you think's bringing him? Father Christmas on his sledge?
Now hear this. All base to red alert.
Who or what are you?
We are called Cybermen. It is quite useless to resist us.
Emotions, love, pride, hate, fear.
Have you no emotions, sir?
T-minus 50 seconds.
Hundreds of them.
Hundreds of what?
Spaceships, sir.
T-minus 40 seconds.
How are we going to survive?
By coming with us.
T-minus 30 seconds.
We can destroy these creatures.
And just how do you propose to do it?
T-minus 20 seconds.
By using the Z-bomb.
You can't do that.
I can and I will.
T-minus 10 seconds.
Cool.
Oh, that is a brilliant trailer, yeah. Oh, wow.
The Tenth Planet. It was first broadcast back in... actually, no. We need to stop this immediately.
Why?
Because we didn't do the competition results.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, no.
Even though I've got it written down in big words, the competition before the review.
So have I. I've written it down in capitals.
Oh, man.
Stop this at once.
We need to do it, because if we don't do it, we're going to just completely, yeah. Okay. Let's do it. Competition time. Such a professional podcast, I know. So, last Friday, we asked all of you a question relating to the Five Doctors, and you could win a copy of The Five Doctors soundtrack, which was gladly a couple of copies given to us by Silver Screen. And the question was, on what date was the first episode from The Five Doctors broadcast globally? And as Adam said earlier, we had quite a few of you email and tweet and Facebook and whatever. But we do have just two winners, which are going to be pulled out of the magic digital hat, if you like.
Mm.
So, I've got my usual Excel spreadsheet, very professional, that I've thrown all the names in, and I've got a little macro. I'm just going to push the button and it will generate a couple of, well, one random name. So we'll do it twice. So the first one, are we ready? Let's fire up the randomizer. Churning away. Here we go. Right. The first name, the first winner is Dean Jones.
Oh, Dean. Oh, well done, man.
Dean Jones. We know Dean.
We do know Dean.
Nestled down firmly in Wales somewhere.
Yes. Yeah. We've seen him at a couple of cons, haven't we?
Yes, indeed. Well done, Dean. Right. Next winner is... Christopher James. You sent your answer in on Facebook. So well done, both of you. I'll be in contact with you at some point today, Friday for you guys, to arrange delivery for those for you. Well done. Again, thank you so much to all of you that have entered. There was a portion of you that got this wrong, though.
Really?
Yes. So the question was, on what date was the first episode from the Five Doctors broadcast globally?
Oh.
So the answer to that question is the 23rd of November.
November, right.
Yes, it broadcast in the UK on the 25th of November. So there's quite a big portion who said the 25th, which was incorrect because we're looking for the broadcast date globally.
Do you mean we got it after other countries? Can you imagine that in this day and age? Twitter would be going mad.
The mutiny
of it.
That would have, yeah. So anyway, thank you so much for sending in your answers to that. Well done to Dean and Christopher. I'll be in contact with you to sort that out. Now that's done, let's crack on with our review of The Tenth Planet. It was first broadcast back on the 8th of October, 1966. Wow. It is a fourth-parter, just under half an hour each, and as we all know, it's Hartnell's last regular appearance as the Doctor. And the story is relatively simple for this one. The Doctor, Ben and Polly arrive at the South Pole in 1986, and the base, the snow base there, is sort of monitoring a mission that's currently going on up in space in the atmosphere. Something goes wrong, the spacecraft gets pulled in, you know, another direction, their power starts to drain and whatever. And it turns out that the reason for that is the gravitational pull from another planet that's appeared in the solar system, hence the name the 10th planet. And it turns out that this planet is Mondas, which used to be a twin of Earth, which has now come back, the Cybermen. So the backstory, which is quite nice that we get given in this, is that the inhabitants of Mondas were very much human, like us at one point, but they discovered that that was a kind of weakness. So they've experimented with sort of cyber robotics and upgrades and all that lot to extend lifespan and get rid of emotions to make them a lot more less weak in all many aspects. So the idea is that Mondas has come back into the solar system and is draining all the power from Earth. But what they don't realize is that it's going to overload and explode, which the Doctor tries to tell them, which they don't listen. That inevitably happens. And the Cybermen get overthrown, if you like, towards the end of the story once Mondas has exploded. And then we finish the story with Hartnell sadly leaving us, which we see in very nice animated form.
Yes.
Episode 4. So, right, a bit of a belter this one, mate. A bit of a big classic in many respects. What are your feelings on it?
Yeah, it's a good one. I do like The Tenth Planet. It's a very good story, I think. The actual storyline is really good. And the Mondasian Cybermen, I just think, are so creepy. It's funny because when you look at them, they're so bulky, aren't they? They must have been one of the most uncomfortable costumes to wear back then. Thankfully, they sort of simplified them over the years, don't they? But I do love the look of them. I find them really creepy. Yeah, it's a very good story. I enjoyed it a lot. I watched it again last night. I've seen it a few times, obviously, but I gave it a rewatch last night. I normally watch them in two and two, but I ended up watching all four in one go. And I think it nipped along at a reasonable pace. I think sometimes the production slips a little. I wish it was a little bit slicker in the production and direction at times. But I do think it's a good story. And I always think the Cybermen are in it a lot more than they are. Watching it again last night, it occurred to me that they're in a couple of really great scenes, but there's a lot of the story when they're not in it at all. So I kind of wish they were in it a little bit more, but no, it's a good story. And I'll get onto Hartnell's regeneration as we get into review, because I think it's good, but it does sort of, because of the sort of problems they had in production with Hartnell falling ill, and he's not in episode 3 at all because he was ill. And there's all this stress about whether he'd be well enough to actually come back to film episode 4, rewrites, you know, at the last minute to accommodate him being off. So there's a few production problems in this story, which they managed to get around very well, I think. They managed to write, you know, they give most of Hartnell's lines in episode 3 to Ben, and it all works quite well, but it does make the regeneration feel slightly out of nowhere, I think. to an extent. But yeah, but overall, I think it's a real good story and I enjoyed it. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. I thought you were going to be a lot more into it than that.
No, I like it. I do like it. Just, no, I don't know. This is just, it's not the massive exit. I think I always have it in my mind. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
And when, I mean, because obviously episode 4 is missing. So on the DVD, it's animated. And actually, the animation, I think, is beautiful on this. I will say they did a really good job, I think, animating episode 4. I mean, the Cybermen look fantastic in animation form. They really look great. So it's a real shame that episode 4 is missing in the archives. So we get the animated version, although it looks fantastic. It sounds like episode 4 has a lot of the action in it. You know, it really ramps up the pace in episode 4, especially after it takes quite a dip in episode 3. I mean, as I said, Hartnell's not in it. I wouldn't say it's padded, but it definitely sort of feels like an episode 3, if you know what I mean. It feels like, okay, episode 4 is when it all kicks off. Yeah. So it's a shame it's missing, and it definitely affects my enjoyment of it a little bit. But no, I like it. I really like it. It's not the big, considering it's the first regeneration that we get in Doctor Who, and it's the introduction to the Cybermen, it's not the big epic story that I think of it in my mind's eye, if that makes sense. But I do think it's a really good story.
I read you.
Just not as epic as I always think of it. Whenever I watch it, it's, what's his name? The General Cutler. The main guy in it. I mean, he carries a lot of the episode. I was sort of thinking last night, giving this a rewatch, he does he's in the majority of the scenes. He's almost like the leading man in it. So I kind of wish, as it's Hartnell's last story, I wish he was a bit more forefront in the story.
Really. I read you. Yeah.
But it's good. I do like it. It is a good one, a very good one. What do you think?
Yes, I think this one is a very, very, very good story. It's kind of on its way to being just great, you know. It's on its way there. It's almost there. I think, yeah. No, I'm not going to be negative at all about it. It's a really, really good story. It's really good. I just think that I would have liked to have... my opinion on the Cybermen is exactly the same as yours. I thought they were in it so much more than what they are. I haven't seen this one in a while.
Yeah.
And I wanted to see more of them in the story, especially from sort of halfway through episode 2, I suppose. Because they do make a threatening, let's not get it twisted, the Cybermen in this are very creepy.
Very.
And very, not just for us viewing it now, but if you can imagine back in the 60s, you know, kids and adults, you know, seeing... You know, TV was very sort of naive back then. Not in terms of purposely being naive, but people weren't used to, you know, the effects that we see today and stuff. So I can imagine back in the 60s, it would have been, you know, really scary, especially for kids watching it. So they are really creepy, and I love the Mondasian Cybermen. Really, really cool. I just wanted to see a lot more of them because I get the feeling that, yeah, they were created and written in this as a really... awesome, you know, threatening sort of bad baddie or baddies for this story. But it seems to sort of, the story always seems to lean back towards the astronauts that were caught up in the atmosphere.
Yeah.
You know, and trying to get them safe and stuff, which is not in itself a bad thing because General Cutler is really concerned about his son who's up there and is he going to get blown to smithereens by the Cybermen spaceships that are in orbit and so on. So you can't, do you know what, mate? This is one of those reviews where I'm sounding negative, but I'm not negative about it, if that makes sense.
No, I know exactly where you're coming from.
Do you know what I mean?
Because I kind of feel the same, because I really like this story, but I have little frustrations with it at the same time, because it is good, but you also think it could have been, like, it's not going to get a 10 from me. If you know what I mean, it's going to get a high score, but it's not going to get a 10. And I think it could have been a 10. I think I would have liked to have seen, like, Cybermen, you know, like when we see the invasion of the Cybermen ships, they say, oh, there's hundreds of them. Would have been nice to have seen perhaps the Cybermen on their spaceship, you know. So to get an idea of the fact that they are, you know, about to invade in mass, you know. So, Because as I said, yeah, when, you know, watching this again last night, the bits that I remember in my mind are the Cybermen walking across the snowscape, TARDIS, as they'd knock that man out. And I thought there was loads of that. And it's a real small little scene, actually. So, yeah, I just would have liked to have felt more of the Cybermen invasion on it. Because I think because they are so good when they're on screen. And this weird thing of the way they talk. So they sort of open their mouth and then clearly someone else is doing the voice. But, you know, it does work. And I don't know if it's I don't know if that was intentional, or you know, I don't know if is the mouth supposed to move in time with the speaking, or if they just said, "Oh, just do that; it'll work." But it makes it so creepy.
It does, yeah.
You know, it's whether it was done by accident or whether it's done intentionally, it really makes the Cybermen creepy when they talk like that with their mouths wide open, almost, and the dead eyes as well. Mm-hmm. It's just the dead eyes. It's just. Yeah, they just look so incredibly creepy.
They do. And, yeah, there's a couple of scenes where the camera's fairly close to the main Cyberman who's doing a lot of the talking. And you can see the actor's eyes through the
holes. Just about, yeah.
But that's not a bad thing, though, because it does give it that sinister kind of, well, that's practically a human inside there. But he's been, as we know, he's been upgraded, so to speak. But you can see his eyes he doesn't blink very often either, the actor inside the suit, and it's really creepy. And I agree with you, mate. They've got a real sort of creepy vibe to them, which we don't get in the current Doctor Who stuff, I don't feel. Not as much, anyway.
Oh, no, I'm not a fan of the new series Cybermen at all. I'm really not. I mean, the thing is, it's a bit like when you see the hands, isn't it? You know, you see them turn over that body, and they've got human hands. I can't remember if they're painted silver or not, because it's black and white. It's hard to tell.
They might be because
they were supposed to wear gloves, weren't they? But somebody in the production department forgot the gloves. So they just went, oh, well. But to me, it works so much better having that sort of slightly human hand.
Yeah.
Because it just shows they've still got part human there. So if they'd have had a glove on, I think, because all the new Cybermen, I mean, the ones in Silver Nemesis, they've got like cricket gloves on, haven't they?
That's
they're massive hands, you know? But I think having that sort of human hand at the end of this horrible sort of robotic outfit that they've got on, you know, I just think it makes it so much more creepy. And I kind of wish they'd stayed with that a little bit. Because I think it's the only time we see it. I think in like the Moon Base and Tomb, they've got sort of gloves on. I seem to remember they've got like three fingers on that. I can't remember now, but they definitely don't have the human hand that we see in this, and it does make them feel much more organic. And there is something very creepy about the fact that you can see bits of human still mangled in with all this stuff, you know. Just works really well. I mean, it's incredible actually when you watch this, and I guess you shouldn't compare it, but I can't help but compare it to, like, you know, the Cybermen we see in like the Age of Steel and the other one. I mean, they're not frightening at all.
No,
they stomp around. I mean, they can't creep up on anyone. They just have no threat compared to these Cybermen, which really do. From the minute they walk on that base, they are just, you know, you just wouldn't mess with them. They really do look terrifying, I think. Yeah,
they do, yeah.
And I think they've
toyed with it a little bit, haven't they? With what was that story where we had the Mondasian Cybermen back for Capaldi's story?
And pain, that one. Don't know. Can't remember.
Was it The Doctor Falls?
God, so bad with names.
Because Bill, she gets Cybermenized.
Well, that's the closest they've got, I think, to getting to this level of creepiness, was that first part of that story. But then in the second part, they went and ruined it by having them flying around up in the sky like Iron Man against. Oh, man. Because it was so creepy, actually, that when they were walking through that sort of hospital ward and they're all in there half converted and you know, that's the nearest they've got to being this level of scary, I think, in the new series.
Yes, absolutely, yeah. So I loved the design of these Cybermen, although they move quite slowly and they're a bit bulky and they're carrying these huge sort of big acrylic and metal things on their fronts, and you know, the weapon that they use is essentially just, I don't know, it's like the old, really old heating coils you used to get on cooker hobs.
Yeah.
And a light bulb behind it. You know, it's just brilliant Doctor Who, though. It's that really just awesome classic black and white, no budget, Blue Peter style, cobble together stuff, you know, but it just works. It just, it's got that raw feel to it. You know, it's not perfect. So, you know, then none of those Cybermen costumes are symmetrical. None of them are exactly the same, you know. So on one actor, the mask looks slightly different to the next one. And, you know, nothing's manufactured, you know, to a millimeter perfect, like in the new series. It's all got that raw kind of, you can feel that back on Mondas somewhere, that these were sort of upgraded and done in a very crude fashion in a way, because they're all just very slightly different. And I love that. I love that old school Who feel to them, you know. They've got hardly any budget to get these done. So I think with the money that they had and so on, it's just a great way of getting, you know, getting the costumes correct off the bat.
Yeah.
And yeah, so I think they were designed by a scientist anyway, weren't they? There was a guy that was, he was a what was his name? Is it Jerry Davis?
Could be. Well, yeah, because it was written by Kit Pedder and Jerry Davis. He might have been. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, so they were created by somebody who obviously had a bit of knowledge about robotics and cybernetics and all that jazz. What's the guy's name? I'm sure it was Jerry Davis who created them. Because he was the guy that created them was a scientist. I think he was actually a scientist as well as a writer.
Oh, no, maybe... Yeah, I was going to say Kit Pedler was a medical scientist.
That's it, Kit Pedler.
Yeah. So maybe Kit Pedler, yeah.
That's it, sorry, yeah. So you can tell a mile off that there has been some kind of scientific thought gone into it. It isn't just somebody in a rubber suit that's spray painted to look metal that they maybe could have done if there wasn't any... I'm not saying it's science fact, you know, anything like that, but you can tell that someone's given it a lot of thought. About, right, if somebody was converted into a robot, whatever, you know, how would they communicate? How would they walk? How would they, you know, look and all that stuff? So you really got to say a big thanks to those early guys that put that thought into it to do it. Because sometimes, especially in very early Doctor Who, it's a case of, right, we've got a monster. We haven't got any budget. So just go and buy a rubber costume from somewhere and make it look good. So we have to, you know, say a big thanks to those early pioneers, if you like, that took the time to speak. Actually, no, you know, if they're going to be part human, part robot, whatever, let's have a think about how they would actually look and behave and stuff. So, yeah, huge respect for, in that aspect.
And you can see how much the restoration team have managed to clean up the picture as well, because, like you said, you can see the actor's eye if you look really carefully, which of course you wouldn't have been able to see back in, you know, when this was transmitted on the sort of televisions back then. But you can also see the sellotape round one of the Cybermen's heads holding his headgear together, which again you wouldn't have been able to notice back then, but they've done a great job cleaning this up and making it look as good as it can, considering it was, what, 1966 or something?
Yeah.
In fact, it was filmed, I was looking at the dates, it's more or less now as we recorded. So the 8th of October, 1966 was when it started. Mm-hmm. So we're now almost sort of doing this podcast almost exactly as when it was actually made and went out. So that's quite cool as well. But no, looking at the design of Cybermen, I kept thinking yesterday while rewatching it is how much I liked them in this, because it made me think about how they've evolved over time in the series itself. And actually they're so different to, even, you know, like in Revenge of the Cybermen, you know, the sort of whole design and the way the Cybermen have evolved and their backstory is actually quite different to what we get in this. And that's one of the things I really like about this story is I love the concept behind what the Cybermen are, how they came to be like they are and all that sort of stuff. And I think they probably lost a bit of that over time. We have slightly gone back towards it in the new series, although I don't like the design. They definitely make the most of, you know, there's loads of scenes in there in the new series where they're like showing, you know, the machinery cutting up the body. Although you don't see it, you see the machinery a lot in the new series. So they make a big deal about the fact that it's all parts of the human body mangled into this. So we've slightly gone back towards that in the new series, which is good. But yeah, it just made me think a lot about the evolution of the Cybermen watching this story. But I just love how they've actually written it in this. Yeah. It's really, yeah, it's really sort of, it's a really interesting concept and quite forward thinking, like you said.
Absolutely. And that's one of the things that's quite cool. I think a couple of our listeners who sent in reviews said a similar thing, that it does feel ahead of its time, this one. It absolutely feels like this is something that you might have seen towards the end of Troughton's era, or possibly even in Pertwee's era. It's got that, I think it's down to the Cybermen look and feel and how they've been written, I'll be honest with you. I think it's those guys really sell the science part of this science fiction show in this part of it. So it definitely feels like it's ahead of its time at the time, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's, we can talk about Cybermen forever, you and I. I think it's, for you, what's more threatening from Classic Who, the Cybermen or the Daleks?
From Classic Who?
Yeah.
Probably the Cybermen, actually.
In Classic Who?
Yeah, it's weird because I think, given push to shove, I probably prefer the Daleks because I just love the Daleks. but I think the Cybermen are a bit more scary in Classic Who.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
The Daleks. See, I'm trying to think of their stories. I mean, in the original story of the Daleks, you know, they are the very first title story with the Daleks. They are pretty scary.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
They did, again, like most things, they get watered down a little bit over time. You know. Although they wobble about a bit in Remembrance, I think they're quite good in that because they do, you know, they're pretty.
They've had a few beers, haven't they, in Remembrance?
They've had a few beers, yeah. But they're still, yeah, yeah. But I think the Cybermen probably. What do you think?
No, I'm glad you said that. I think in Classic Who, I think the Cybermen have really been sold in as a very creepy, threatening force, if you like. And I think the most threatening story for the Daleks is the Daleks, that story. Because the way that they were filmed and so on, you've got these sort of bottom-up camera angles and they just look really menacing and really... I think it's maybe that mystique as well in the early stories for both the Cybermen and the Daleks, you know, that we don't know a lot about them at that point. Because in newer Doctor Who, we know literally everything about both of them, whereas in the early, especially early Classic Who, that... You know, we don't need to be drip-fed, you know, everything at once. It's nice to have, and obviously we know there's a bit of backstory in this story in terms of we know that they're from Mondas, and Mondas was a twin planet of Earth, and so we get given that in this story. But we don't get anything visually in our faces. We don't see any Cybermen being created. We don't see any Cybermen sort of wandering around without, you know, a couple of limbs where they've been in a scrap and they've lost, you know, they remain intact for the most part.
It makes me want to watch the moon base, actually. It really, I was watching this yesterday and I was getting confused in my head as well. I kept thinking, oh, where's that scene where they're all walking across the landscape? I was like, oh no, it's the moon
base. That's the moon base, yeah.
Really made me want to watch that. Because we don't, it's a shame that Pertwee never got to meet the Cybermen. I think there was a real missed opportunity there. I'd have loved to have seen the Third Doctor battle the Cybermen. And I'd like to have seen how they would have done the design during the Pertwee era. Because, you know, from 10th Planet to Moon Base, they changed quite a bit, really. The Moon Base is sort of going much more towards what we get to see later in the classic series.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, this is quite an original sort of design, I think, in 10th Planet. We tend to move more towards the sort of metal monster from Moonbase onwards. I really like the Moonbase design, actually. And then obviously we get Tomb of the Cybermen. They look really good in that. Wheel in Space. I can't even remember Wheel in Space. Does that even exist? I can't remember Wheel in Space at all.
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah, I need to give that a watch, actually. Is that one that's incomplete, maybe?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I was going to say, I just can't remember Wheel in Space at all, actually. Let me just see. Induce Wendy Padbury. And then no Pertwee story with the Cybermen. The next time they pop up is in Revenge of the Cybermen, where they're, I think that's where they got a little bit diluted, isn't it? You know, I quite like Revenge, but they feel very different from the Cybermen that we've got in this, I think.
They are very different, yeah.
Yeah, but yeah, wouldn't it have been great to have seen Pertwee battle them? I wonder why they never came, because he's got a lot of Dalek stories, Pertwee.
He's got three, hasn't he?
Three or four, at least. Yeah. Got a few, and yet he didn't even like the Daleks. It's just, yeah, I wonder why they never paired him up with the Cybermen. I think that would have been cool.
Yeah, strange. So the Cybermen kind of go through, I would say, sort of three phases in their design to me. So you've got the early classic Who style, which is the sort of sock that they put over their head with the eyes.
Reminds me of a bank robber.
Yeah. And then you've got the Troughton ones, which were the same look, if you like, but it was just replaced with the metal. So instead of like the fabric-y soft,
that's it,
helmet and stuff, it's got more of a metal look to it now, hasn't it? Mm-hmm. And they took the size of the big light on the top of their head down quite a lot.
Yeah, that's right.
Because in this one, the light at the top of the head is like they're going into the mines or something.
Yeah.
And then we shift into like the fourth doctor, fifth doctor, where they've completely redone. So they've now got these really big ear sort of side sections, haven't they? Mm-hmm. And they've done away with the light completely on top. It's just these bars that go back into the helmet, if you like.
Yeah.
And they've got the... Yeah, I don't know. They've just got a much more robotic look. And then you've got the newer Doctor Who, where they've gone down the Iron Man kind of look and feel, with their sort of panels that make up the face, and they look shiny and polished. And
you think of Nightmare in Silver, where they got those super Cybermen that can move at the speed of light and all that sort of stuff, and it's, you know, it sort of makes a joke of it, really. It's nowhere, you know, you don't need all of that. You just, if you look at these are so much more scary.
Yeah.
Than what we've had in, is that the last Cybermen story we've had? Oh, no, of course. We've had the 12th Doctor, haven't we? But yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely was.
Yes. But yeah, so, I mean, in terms of Cybermen, like I said, we can chat about this for hours, but in terms of Cybermen, I think we're agreed that very, very cool design. Very sinister, creepy. Just the way that they were filmed. I don't know if it was intentional, but like you said, with the actor's mouth just remaining open and the words coming out, and it's just really creepy.
Yeah.
Okay, production-wise, directing-wise, all that stuff. Like you said, it does move along at a relatively decent pace. There are a few moments where I think there's a couple of filler moments.
Yeah.
Especially the bit where they're trying to disable the bomb. The rocket.
In episode 3. Yep. Yeah.
That kind of fizzled out to me. That was like a bit of a moment in a story where you think that could lead somewhere, but it just, you know, the countdown gets cancelled. They can't fix it. And then Mondas breaks up anyway. So there's no need to launch the rocket. So that kind of went nowhere to me. It was okay in a way that they discovered that the Cybermen they can't handle the radiation that's being output in that room. They sort of go a bit floppy, and that was about it, really.
That was something else that interests me as well, because that's used to sort of defeat them in a way. And I was thinking, I don't think that's mentioned again, is it? Because as we move through Classic Who, there's like suddenly they're allergic to gold, which I think is brought in Revenge of the Cybermen. I can't remember how they defeat them in Moonbase. I need to watch Moonbase, I think, later. But yeah, this radiation thing.
One of the actors who's very strong, who is it?
That's Tomb of Cybermen. You mean,
oh, that's Tomb, that, yeah, sorry.
What, where he lifts him up and, yeah, that's great.
Oh, the moon base, I can't, oh man, you know, obviously we can't remember. But,
But that whole radiation idea just seemed quite fresh to me. I was thinking, yeah, that's something I don't, if you said to me before I watched this, how'd you kill a Cyberman? I'd say, oh, probably gold or, you know, or whatever. But yeah, I'd forgotten about this whole radiation thing, and I think that makes more sense. I never quite got why would they be allergic to gold, but yeah, especially in Silver Nemesis, where they're getting gold arrows shot at them, and it's a little bit ridiculous, really.
It's one thing
I liked about Earthshock when we reviewed it recently was how difficult the Cybermen were to kill. Like in Silver Nemesis, they go down like flies, but at least in the Earthshock, I mean, I think they're quite scary in that as well, actually. I think Earthshock, they're pretty... That's another good Cyberman story. But, yeah, they got a definite threat level in that.
No, definitely. Yeah. So that was interesting, actually. because it's not something, I don't know about you, but when I first watched this, I thought, that's really weird. Why would the Cybermen be affected by radiation? Surely they're, you know, mostly mechanical selves and they must have some kind of whatever built in that would combat that, but I don't know.
Yeah, if it had been written by Terry Nation, I wouldn't be at all surprised because he loves anything to do with radiation. Yeah. It's always radiation. But yeah, I know it was a bit of a surprise. Yeah. But no, production and direction, I think is all right. I think the direction could have been a bit more exciting, but it's weird because there are some great shots in it and there are some really nice bits of direction. And then other bits just feel really a bit shoot and point. And as I said, pacing's okay as well, but it's a very enclosed set, isn't it? It's mostly in that set, so it does feel a little bit contained at times.
Yeah.
Production value wise, I think they've done a good job. The sets look good. A few sound issues though. There's a few times where the mic's clearly not in the right place, where one of the actors is obviously close to the mic and he's very clear, and then Polly will be sort of at the other end of the room and obviously the sound man hasn't quite picked her up, so you can just about hear what she's saying. And it seemed like there's a few, it's probably time wise, you know, it's probably that old enemy time pushing the production again. Yeah. But there were, I noticed there's a couple of bits like that. I was thinking, oh, that would have been reshot if it was done now, because you couldn't hear what she was saying there, because, you know, clearly the sound boom wasn't close enough, sort of thing. There was a few bits like that.
There was. I know what you mean. There was a couple of scenes where there was a couple of the actors closer to the camera or the mic, you're having a bit of a ruck and Hartnell's shouting at them, and even though he's shouting, you can't really hear him very well.
Exactly. Yeah. He's not picked up.
The other actors' voices are obviously closer to the mic and they're coming through fine, but you've got Hartnell, bless him, he's just, you know, bellowing at times and you can't really hear him. But I agree. I mean, production, it does at the outside, well, the set that they had as the outside bit where the snow's, I don't know if it's like polystyrene they're blowing really thick or anything, but that was really cool actually. And there was a couple of scenes where the one of the Cybermen ships was sort of landing.
Oh yeah, nice model shot. Yeah.
It goes on for a little bit, you know, it could have been done a bit quicker, but overall, and I have to remind myself all the time that this was back in the mid-60s and you know, stuff hadn't moved along quite as much in terms of visual effects and so on, miniatures and stuff, but it actually looks all right, and they seem to have got it fairly decently in scale as well. The TARDIS looks quite small.
Yeah, it does. Yeah,
compared to the ship and stuff. So production-wise, it's they've actually done pretty well.
Yeah.
And also direction-wise, I don't really have any complaints in terms of direction.
I didn't find it that exciting at all. I mean, there, as I said, there are bits that are really good. I think the bits with the snow cap and all the Cybermen coming out and all that stuff's good. There's a bit where they turn over a body. I love the fact they just put the coats on as a disguise as well when they kill people. Like, we'll just put his coat on, no one will reckon, you know. They literally walk into the base wearing them and no one bats an eyelid until they reveal themselves. It's like, really? Direction, I think, is a bit on par. It's a bit standard. I think it could have been a bit more exciting, the direction, but it's not bad. But who was the director? Derek Martinius.
His name? Derek Martinus. Yeah,
Martinus. Yeah, yeah. It's not bad, but I think it could have been a bit more exciting. But then again, I suppose back in the '60s, they probably got these great big heavy cameras, and maybe it was a bit awkward. We've just given that one set, so yeah. But it's okay. Yeah, it's certainly not bad direction.
Yeah, I mean, I think going back to my earlier point that I wanted to see the Cybermen in it a lot more. I think if they were in it more, that would have given the director a bit more of an opportunity to maybe do something with those scenes if the Cybermen were in it a bit more. But I think because we've only got one or two sets to play with, that you're kind of limited on what you can do in a way.
I think you're right, mate, because that cliffhanger to episode one where we get that beautiful shot of the Cybermen's face, you know, that's a lovely piece of direction. I think you're right. Yeah, if he'd been sort of, I think he could have done more with it. It was sad that the credits come up over that shot, actually, because that's such a great shot of the sort of first sort of proper look at the Cybermen, you know, up close, and then it comes up with the credits. It's like, no, I just want to freeze frame without that.
Absolutely, mate. It's
you're probably right.
I don't have any complaints about what we saw. It just would have been nice to have a bit more sort of thrown in there, I think, is Yeah. What did you think to kind of the story as it weaved through those four episodes? So there was kind of a couple of things going on. We had obviously the threat of the Cybermen, who are not only is Mondas creeping back into the solar system and draining Earth's power, but we also had the the supposedly hundreds of ships that were ready to land and invade. So we had that's kind of like the main thread of the story, isn't it? The imminent attack from the Cybermen.
Yeah.
Who are, unbeknownst to them, their planet's going to break up if they don't sort of stop draining the power. Mm. That was the main thing. And then there were two other threads that ran underneath it. The other one was the astronauts that were stuck up in space. So we lost the first two astronauts. They copped it, didn't they?
Yeah.
But then we had Cutler's son who was up there and he's doing all he can to save him. So you got that. And then in the back of your mind, you had the Doctor who's not quite behaving as he normally does. And us now, looking back, we know that it's leading up to a regeneration. But at the time when this went out and you were watching it live, you just maybe thought, why is the Doctor ill? What's wrong with him? So you had that sort of strange thing going on with the Doctor as well. So you wouldn't know it, you know, unless you knew somebody in the production team at the BBC or anything, you wouldn't know that William Hartnell was ill.
Yeah.
Or anything. You just thought, okay, why is he not here? Especially, you know, obviously in episode 3, why is he ill and why is he acting this way? So did you like how the stories kind of weaved in and out of each other as you go through those four parts?
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, I wasn't too, there's, you know, in the first couple of episodes, there's quite a bit about those two astronauts in space and they get the fatigue, don't they? And they start acting really slowly. And I wasn't too invested in that particular thread, if you like. So when they sort of get killed off, I thought, okay, it didn't really go anywhere really. But it's interesting having the general sun put up in space because that adds an element of, you know, sort of a nice sort of a family tie-in. I thought, yeah, it gives a bit more threat level and stuff, so that was okay. But yeah, I would have liked to have seen, it's such a shame Hartnell was ill, I would have liked to have seen more about what was going on with the Doctor and in terms of the regeneration really, because Hartnell gets knocked a lot for fluffing his lines. I was watching quite carefully. I didn't notice any fluffs.
Not this time.
From him in this. No. It seemed to me like he really wanted to go out on top of his game. And I think Annika Wills talks about it in the making of. She was like, he really wanted to get this right. You know, he told them off for playing ping pong at one point in the rehearsals because he's like, no, I'm trying to learn this. You know, he was very serious about getting his performance right in this. And I think his performance is very good. I just wanted to see a bit more of him, really. And I know it couldn't be helped that he was ill, so they had to sort of write him out of episode 3. But even in the original draft, I don't think he was that prominent in it, if you know what I mean. And so, but I would have liked to see a bit more build up of the Doctor's regeneration, because he just suddenly gets ill.
Suddenly,
and that, yeah. And that's it. In fact, literally at the start of episode 3, just collapses, doesn't it? And it's a somebody else playing the Doctor just falls on the floor, and that's pretty much it then.
But I
was invested enough in the threads of the story. It was there was enough going on to keep my interest for sure.
Yeah, me too. Mm. Yeah, there was just enough. I think if one of those threads wasn't there, it would have been, I don't want to say boring. I don't know if that's the right word, but there wouldn't be enough meat on the bones because the Cybermen weren't in it enough, in my opinion. If we didn't have those three threads, if one of them wasn't there, it just would have been a bit empty, I would say. And like I said, we did have that little filler moment with the rocket and the radiation and stuff, which was okay, although it fizzled out a little bit. Yeah.
And I don't know about you, mate, but two things have affected the way I look at this story. One of them is an adventure in space and time, because we know about the backstory about Hartnell leaving and stuff. So I always sort of, that's always in the back of my mind when I'm watching this, is he was kind of like, you know, forced out of the role in a sense. You know,
it
was probably the right move, but there's no two ways about it. He was told he was being replaced. So that's always in the back of my mind when I'm watching this, which, again, viewers back then wouldn't have known. They might have just assumed that he'd had enough and the Doctor was being recast. You know, nowadays we know a lot more about behind the scenes of things. And the other thing that was sort of in the back of my mind when watching this was, Twice Upon a Time. The time, you know, the whole time I was watching, I was thinking, yeah. So where, at what point does the Doctor wander out and meet, you know, his future self? Because I, in my head, I was thinking it's when he's asleep, but then I was thinking that can't be then, because when he goes back, it sort of goes back to the regeneration scene, doesn't it? So, so I was trying to place, I was trying to put where Twice Upon a Time fits in with this story as well. I don't know. Is it when, you know, when the Doctor sort of stumbles out and says it's far from all over, and then he sort of stumbles out, and then there seems to be, he seems to have got away from Polly and Ben because they're knocking on the TARDIS door. So is it then? Is it from when he sort of leaves the room and maybe he goes off, bumps into his 12th incarnation, they go off on an adventure, then he lands back again, which is when Polly and that are banging on the door and regeneration time. I don't know. I was just trying to fit in where Twice Upon a Time starts in this, and that's the only point I can think of, really.
Maybe it's episode 3.
No, that, but that's what I thought originally. But then I was thinking, no, it can't be, because when he lands again, but Ben and it starts with Ben and Polly going in and him regenerating. So I'm thinking it's when he sort of says it's far from all over, and he staggers out the room, says something about wrapping up warm, and then it, and then Ben and Polly step over the side of him, and he's like, oh, he's a good looking chap. Oh, and then the next thing you know, the next thing you know, they're banging on the TARDIS door saying, let us in, and he's starting to regenerate. So I'm thinking, is it? That's the only sort of gap I can think of.
Yeah, I mean, that's,
because he seems to have got away from him, doesn't he?
Yes. I think that is interesting, though, because they did cut something out of this, didn't they? In the original, script or the original recording or whatever, there was, the Doctor was meant to say, no, I simply will not give in.
That's right, yeah.
And they cut it out because they thought, well, because at the time, the production was a bit sort of, there were some grey areas about how, you know, what's happening with Hartnell and the whole regeneration thing. And I think Moffat sort of picked up on that. So he used that as the, in Twice Upon a Time, as the Doctor not wanting to regenerate because he knew he was going to.
Which is quite like that. Yeah.
So I think if they would have kept that line in, that would have been the moment that he went off to have his little adventure with Capaldi and then back again. But we just don't know when in the story that line would have been in there. I'm guessing it would, well, like you said, probably around that time.
The only time when I was watching yesterday, it's the only time I could sort of think where it might fit. I don't know, somebody listening might want to disagree or have another theory, but that's where I would put it.
I mean, logically, it would fit there.
Mm.
It would fit.
I kind of wish they'd left that line in, actually.
Because
he doesn't really get a last line, does he? He says something about wrapping up warm.
But
even that is so quiet. Again, comes back to what we were saying about not being picked up by the mics very well. Even that, you can barely hear it.
Hardly any air. He says, oh, yes, thank you. That's good. Keep warm. But you can't really hear
it. It's not the best of... this is what I mean about... You know, a bit like you said earlier, I do love this story and I don't want to be negative, but there are bits like that where I think, oh, that could have just, that would have notched it up another point on my score.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't have to be an amazing, fantastic, oh, this is, you know, like, I don't want to go, or, you know, it doesn't have to be an amazing last minute line, but it, I don't know, something, it does feel like it's slightly lacking.
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah.
And it's one thing I do try to bear in mind, especially with anything during the Hartnell era, is that everything was a first.
True.
For those guys. So any time we had a popular baddie like the Daleks or the Cybermen, or, you know, the first time we see the TARDIS, or, and in this case, when we're going through or leading up to the Doctor's regeneration, this is all sort of new ground that they were, there's no template. I mean, it's, I'm not saying it's easy, but for newer writers of Doctor Who, they know 100% how the regeneration works and how that all sort of, they can write stories around that and lead it up to that. Whereas back in this story, like, they didn't have a clue. What, that's the wrong phrase. I mean, they didn't have any experience to base this on. It's all firsts and new and stuff. Mm. So I do try and bear that in mind with a lot of the Hartnell era.
And some people might like that more subtle exit, I suppose. Some people might say, well, why do you need a big finale thing? You know, maybe it's quite nice to have this very quiet sort of regeneration, I suppose. But yeah, I just sort of thought, I was sort of waiting for that moment. You always wait for the moment, don't you? Oh, this is it, sort of thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, maybe it is quite nice that it's more subtle.
Yeah. Okay, so just lastly, before we move on to characters, do you feel like this is one of those classic Who stories where it could have moved along? Well, you know, some stories are a bit, they drag a little bit, especially 4 and 6-parters. Did you find that with this one? Because I know you said you watched this all in one go in the end.
No, I didn't. I didn't get bored. I would admit, I probably would have. It would have benefited, I think, if I'd have watched it 2 and 2.
Right.
I think if I watched it Monday and then Tuesday, but I wasn't around Monday, so I couldn't. But I would have preferred to have watched it 2 episodes at a time, and I think it would have been great.
Okay.
But watching it all 4 in 1 go, I still found it a good watch. There were moments, I think, like you mentioned, episode 3, where I did sort of dip out a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But no, overall, I thought it was quite a decent watch all the way through. Yeah.
And just lastly, before characters, animation for episode 4.
Yeah.
Very good.
Really good, yeah, because I really couldn't remember because some of the animations are better than others, and I really couldn't think if it was good in this one or not until I put it on. Arthur was very good, actually. It might be one of the best animations they've done. The Cybermen look fantastic in animation form. Maybe it's because of the simplistic design of them, just really suits the animation. I mean, in the sort of head sort of sculpt, because they focus a lot on the head in the animation, and it really works well, actually. I mean, It's strange because it bugs the hell out of me that the BBC have lost. How can you lose that episode in particular? Or how can you, I don't know if it was lost or destroyed or whatever, but you know, of all the episodes to not have.
It's a tragedy, isn't it?
Episode 4. Yeah. I know. And then of course the whole next story as well, Power of the Daleks, gone. So you've got the first regeneration and then it's, you know, and the following story. The only way you can experience it is all through animation, you know, and even though it is so nicely done, it's not the same, is it?
It's not, no. I mean, I do have a sort of appreciation for the animation. It's very well done. So Planet 55 Studios, they did this and the Moon Base.
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah.
And
yeah.
They both look really, really good. Really
yeah,
good.
I was very impressed with it because I really struggle with the telly snaps. I find them almost impossible to watch. Because unfortunately, if you want to see the actual, they've got most of the surviving footage of the actual regeneration. So they've got like the last 30 seconds or whatever somehow. I don't know what that's from, probably Blue Peter or something. So if you want to see the actual footage of him regenerating, you can, but you have to, it's on the telly snaps version, which is on DVD, and it's just impossible to sit through. I mean, I literally skipped the end just to watch the regeneration, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure why they didn't include that last actual video footage of the regeneration in this.
Like an alternative version or something would have been nice, wouldn't it?
Yeah. But overall, though, it sort of does and it's much better, like you said, than the telly snaps. It's a lot nicer.
I can't watch the telly snaps. They really annoy me.
Yeah. But overall, I would rather have it like this than this whole story not, you know.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we should be grateful they've got the audio at least, because, you know, at least the audio is the original.
Yeah.
So, no, they do a very good job of it. I found the animation extremely watchable in this one. I was worried that I was going to get to episode 4 and sort of tail off a bit. Do you know what I mean? I thought, oh, it's the animated episode now. And I was a bit like that. And when I put it on, I was actually like, wow, this is actually really good. And as I said, a lot of the action's in episode 4 as well. So in many ways, episode 4... probably the best. So it's, again, it makes it even more frustrating that we don't have the real thing. But yeah. I guess it's as good as it gets for now, unless someone's gonna, you know, find it in the future. But yeah,
there must be a copy somewhere.
There must be.
Yeah, I think the only surviving copy apparently was loaned out to Blue Peter, wasn't it? Because they were going to do a little 10th anniversary compilation thing of Doctor Who. So smart. Somebody's had away with it. Characters then. Characters. I can't remember the character names of these first group.
It's quite a big cast, isn't it, to be fair? Yeah.
So the initial people that we see at the the snow base. It's the guys who are looking through the periscope as the TARDIS is there, and the Doctor, and they're walking around in the snow. Those guys, and they do pop up every now and then throughout the story. So there's a couple of them, isn't there? I can't remember for the life of me, but one of them's got a shocking US accent. I know that.
I was going to say, we get a few dodgy accents in this.
Yeah. But those guys are okay, though. It's one of those stories where the supporting cast, and there were two other supporting cast members who were properly into it and were very good. I'll come on to in a minute. But most of the cast looked like they were into it for a crazy science fiction show.
Yeah, I was going to say, dodgy accents aside, they all do seem to be giving quite decent performances, actually. There was a bit in there where one of them's very excited about the fact that a girl has landed on somewhere. A girl?
Oh, yeah.
Gee, boy.
They all come running around, don't they?
Yeah. Like, I'm surprised they had those little... I know they're very mild by today's standards, but looking back, you know, when this was put out, I'm surprised they have those pictures of the girls on the wall, like scantily clad. That's quite racy for Doctor Who in the 60s. I just was surprised to see that in Doctor Who for the time it was shown. But
a little bit.
Yeah.
Yes.
A girl
around these parts. Well, no, they weren't like cowboys, were they? But you know.
No, but they weren't far off.
Yeah. One of them was meant to be like a New York accent, I think. And anyways, they were fairly good. What about the astronauts that were up in the capsule towards the beginning, sort of episode 1 and 2?
I found them a bit dull, really.
Do you know what? Yeah, one of them was okay. I can't remember the black guy who seemed to be in command, I think.
Yeah.
He wasn't too bad, but the other guy was just a wet lettuce,
yeah,
really.
I think that's why I didn't care about, you know, I said earlier, but I didn't care about that particular story strand.
Right, yeah.
I think it's because of their performance, to be honest. I just found them a bit boring.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I was like, yeah, I didn't really care about them as much as I should have, really.
Yeah. Mm. And what about Cutler's son then? He's the other astronaut who's up in...
Oh, that's right, yeah. We only see him on a screen, don't we? Well, he was all right.
Not too bad. Not too bad. And then we have the guy who's like the head of the UN. He's like the guy who's back on Earth who's trying to sort all the madness out.
Is he the one doing
out.
The sort of dodgy, I don't know what accent he's supposed to be doing.
I don't know.
Is it sort of Italian? Or?
I was going to say, I think it's Italian or Spanish. Yeah, I don't know.
So the character's name was Winger, and he's played by an actor called Steve Plytus. Right. So I'm disappointed in him.
Right.
Because his performance wasn't very good. And the reason I'm disappointed in him is because I've seen him in other things where he's really good.
Right.
So I don't know what went wrong. He fluffed so many lines.
He did, didn't he? Yeah.
He's fluffed loads of lines.
Yeah. Yeah.
And his performance was just really forgettable. And I kept thinking, but this is a good actor here. He should be really good in this role. Mm-hmm. And there may be a reason for it. I don't want to say too much in case, you know, maybe he was just getting on a bit. I don't know. But I've seen him in other things where he's been really good. Like, I always think of him as Kurt in Fawlty Towers. You know, he was in one episode of Fawlty Towers, and he's the chef who gets drunk and everything goes wrong. And he's really good in that. But he's been in loads of things. And I just couldn't get over how flat his performance was in this, considering I know he can be a lot better, because you know he was in like the Avengers and Danger Man, the Saint. He's just one of those actors that used to pop up in loads of things back in the day,
right?
So I don't know, very disappointed in his performance in this. Just wasn't very good. Lots of fluffs.
Yeah, that's one thing I did note down, actually, that even his opening scene, he fluffed it at the end.
There was no energy to his performance at all.
No. Maybe the director's fault, maybe. If you're saying that he's been pretty good in other things, it might be.
Oh, yeah, he's a good character actor. I wasn't feeling him in this.
Okay, what about, there was a guy called Dyson, who was one of the guys in the suits in the snow base. He kind of a pointless character, in my opinion. He was just he wasn't in charge, but he wasn't one of the lower ranking people. He was just there,
saying stuff
at various points. I think he was just basically saying to Dr. Barclay, look, just do what they're asking you to do, otherwise we're all dead. You know, so bit pointless, really. But Dr. Barclay, played by David Dodimede, I thought he was brilliant in this as a character.
Yeah, I liked him as well, because he was one of those you could sort of empathise with, that he just wanted to do the right thing. I liked him as well. Yeah, it was a nice little performance.
His performance was really, really good, I thought. He played that stressed out, worried, you know, because he's the one that says, look, you can't launch the bomb because radiation will wipe out most of the life on Earth anyway. So it's lesser of two evils sort of thing. But he was like, no, you can't do that. And then there was a scene where he helps Ben and some other people try and disarm the thing. So he really got his sort of teeth into the role, I felt. He was really...
Yeah, really I liked it. He was the moral character as well, wasn't he? He was the one that we sort of agreed with and was doing the right thing. Yeah, and he did give a good performance as well. I liked him.
Yeah. And what about Robert Beatty then, as General Cutler?
Cutler.
Interesting character, that one.
Well, he has to carry an awful lot of the story, doesn't he? I hadn't realised how much of the action, and he's like centre stage in this story.
Yeah.
And I think he does a decent job, I think. I mean, I do think his performance is good in it. I suppose the character's slightly annoying, although he's meant to be, isn't he? Because you're kind of like, he's the one that wants to let off the bomb, and he's a bit gung-ho, and that's my son up there, and all this sort of stuff. I think he does give a good performance. Like I said, he does have to kind of carry most of the episodes. He's front of the action. So I think he's pretty decent. Yeah. Yeah.
He's not too bad. I felt like he was
a little bit caricature.
Yeah, a little bit at times.
What's he been in? Because a face I recognise, there's a click on his. I've seen him in lots of things. He looked very familiar anyway.
Yeah, he was Bran Foster apparently in Blake 7.
Oh, right. Yeah, that'll be where I know him from then. Yeah, Blake. Gosh, he looks a bit different in that. I'd forgotten about that.
Yeah. Apparently he was in Minder as well.
Oh, right. Oh, that'd be the other one I know him from then.
Yeah, not Zedcars though.
Really?
Which
what
is
about
weird?
Dixon and Doc Green? No, surely Dixon and Doc Green. No?
No.
Golly. But no, he was good, I thought. As I said, he gets quite a lot to do. Yeah. And he is a bit caricature, but I think he plays that sort of character quite well. So,
yeah. I remember him mostly. He had a fairly small part in an amazing film called Where Eagles Dare.
Oh yeah, yeah. Is that Clint Eastwood?
The old classic war film. So he was in that for a reasonable part in there, but not too bad in this. Just a bit OTT at times. What about Pen and Bolly?
I did that earlier, Pen and Bolly.
What about Ben and Polly then?
Well, I do like these two companions, I have to say. And Ben, he's quite lovable, really, isn't he? Because he's a bit of a lad, and he comes out with some wise cracks, light and all that. So I do like Ben Jackson as a companion, and I think there's something very charming about Michael Craze. So, I do like him. I think he picks up a lot of Hartnell's lines.
He does.
And to be fair, they suit him because he's the sort of younger action, getting stuck in there doing stuff. So I like that. I thought Annika Wills was really good in this, in her performance. Like, she does look quite scared and she gives a very nice performance. It is a shame that she gets rallied into just making the coffee in, I think it's episode 3, they're like, go make some coffee, and she's like, okay then, and so she kind of gets sidelined a little bit, but she does give a very nice performance. I just think they're nice together, those two. They're two really likable companions, Ben and Polly.
Yeah.
And they care for the doctor, don't they? You feel this real warmth that they care about the doctor. Yeah. I like that.
And in a way, I felt like the character of Ben was like a precursor to Jamie.
Oh, a little bit.
Yeah, because they do have that good bond. And like you say, he does, you can tell that he really cares for the doctor. And like Jamie, you know, he gets his, willing to have a scrap and get his hands dirty. But Michael Craze, he met his wife, didn't he, while working on Doctor Who?
Yes, he did, yeah.
And they called their son Ben.
Did they?
Very
all
cute,
right, okay.
I thought.
Yeah, that's nice.
But in terms of performance stuff, yeah, I thought, I've seen worse stories with classic Who companions, put it that way.
Mm.
I wanted a bit more from Polly, though. I thought Annika Wills did okay, but she was just a bit of a, unfortunately for Classic Who, she does have a, there is a scene where she's like, oh, I'll just make some coffee. You know, and she doesn't really.
The general says, don't you do something useful, go make some coffee. Yeah. It's like, oh dear.
Oh dear. Yeah. But I thought, I thought both were okay. Especially, I think Ben, he had a bit more to do. So.
Well, that's that when I said that the general carries a lot of the action, it would have been nice if maybe they'd have got a bit more of that. That's what I was saying. You know, the general does take up a lot of screen time. I would have liked to seen Ben and Polly get a bit more of that screen time, really.
Yeah. Mm. And then Mr. Hartnell himself, then.
Last story.
Suffers the same problem of no fault of his own as the Cybermen, in that he's not in it enough.
He's not in it enough, especially as his last story.
Yeah.
He definitely needed to be in this one. I know he was ill, but even in the original script, he wasn't that forefront in the story because of his decline in health. They had sort of, started to write less for the character to do so that, you know, to help him with his performance. So he wasn't in it that much to begin with anyway.
Yeah.
But he does feel very much in the background. It's such a shame because it is his last story.
Yeah.
And obviously then he falls ill, which means he's in it even less. So, as I said earlier, Hartnell comes in for a lot of flack for fluffing his lines and all this sort of stuff, which, you know, he does in some stories, but he's absolutely on the ball in this. Someone might want to correct me, but I was watching very carefully. I didn't spot one fluff. I kept waiting for it. You know, I kept thinking, is he? But no, he was very much on top of his game, I thought, in this one. Yeah. Giving a very strong performance, I thought. I just, like you, just wanted more Hartnell. Just wanted more from him. And I don't think this was the last one he filmed. I think production-wise, this was the second before last. I think they filmed The Smugglers after this for some reason. So it's weird to think that he filmed his exit and then filmed another full story. That must have been quite strange. But Annika Will said, you know, during the handover, it was very pleasant. She said he, you know, because he did really struggle with the fact he was leaving. It was a bit of a, I don't want to go, but I kind of feel like I should go, and I kind of feel like I've been pushed out, but actually I've done my time. And he was really conflicted apparently about leaving the show, but when it comes to Troughton coming on set and doing the handover, apparently it was very very gentlemanly, I think she said. You know, they were chatting and because I think I always wonder about that. I think, is it Davison that says about, am I remembering right, Davison said when he took over from Tom, I don't think Tom said two words to him. I can't remember. I might be misquoting him there, but
no,
it's
right.
Not always been that amicable. Or maybe it was Pertwee and Baker. I can't remember now, but yeah, it was nice to think that Hartnell and Troughton had a nice little chat on set and said, oh, so you're taking over, are you? Oh, good. You know, or whatever. And it was all very amicable, which is nice.
Yeah. His performance, though, when he was on screen was really good. You wouldn't have
really
known
good.
That he was ill. You wouldn't have known.
No. I wouldn't have said so. You don't feel like, oh dear. You know, like in like the Three Doctors, you can see he looks ill. The way he's delivering his lines is not quite on point.
Yeah.
You don't get any of that in this. He seems very much on top of his game. And clearly underneath he wasn't. Clearly underneath all that, he's actually not very well. But no, he certainly seems to be rocking and rolling, I think, in this.
Yeah. A couple of funny little quips from him, like when They're for some reason they get lined up and Cutler's like walking up and down having a look at them. And Hartnell's immediately like, now listen here, young man. You know, I don't like your face. I don't like your voice.
Yeah,
that sort of thing. He's got those sort of funny. And then there's a few scenes later in episode two where he's having a proper go at a couple of people.
There's one bit where he really shouts. Yeah.
He's going for it. So typical Hartnell, really sort of on the ball, even though he wasn't well. You wouldn't know it. You know, even though he was acting unwell, which might have been easy for him to do, I'm not sure. But when he was on screen and he was doing his thing, it's just, brilliant Hartnell.
As always. I really was intrigued about the regeneration as well. In the making of, they say that, they were sort of thinking, how are we going to do it? Because, you know, nowadays it's so easy to do that sort of effect. But back then they were like, so are we just going to, we're just going to lie them on the floor next to each other and mix from one camera to the other, or how are we going to do this? And then somebody in the production said, well, actually, there's this faulty mixer button that basically when you press it, it doesn't work properly. So it kind of fades things to white. How about if we use that faulty button and then mix the two pictures. Let's see if that works. And I just love the fact they have to be so inventive, you know, like this broken button that's probably driven them mad for years actually finally finds a use for the first regeneration. And I love that. I love the fact they did it, because that's how they did it in the end. They just used that faulty mixer,
yeah,
you know, and then mix the other two pictures in. And and history is made, if you like. Well, it is, isn't it? I mean, it's allowed the show to go on and on and on. And, you know, I mean, we're used to people being recast, but it's normally quite often done without any explanation, isn't it? Someone will just walk in looking completely different, but it's the same character. Just ignore it. It's, you know, I remember when Dallas did that with with Miss Ellie.
Yeah.
You know, you had Barbara Belgellis, is that his name? Played her for years and years and years, and then one series, I think it was like series 11 or 12, suddenly they brought in this very glamorous woman who looked absolutely nothing like her. But no, that's Miss Ellie, she's exactly the same. It was like, really? So, but at least in this one they thought, well, let's not just take the viewers as idiots. Let's actually put in an explanation, and it will allow the series to just go on and on and on, you know.
Yeah, what a genius.
It's idea. A great idea, yeah. And I mean, can you do it with anything else? I mean, with Bond?
Well, it's not a regeneration in a way, is it? It's just a continuation of
continuation.
The character.
But at least in this, that's what I mean. Is there any other show you could do it? Because of the brilliance of Doctor Who, it's the perfect formula, isn't it?
It is.
You know, something causes the Doctor to change. You know, it's brilliant.
It's amazing,
really,
isn't it? Yeah.
Well, it just means it can go on forever and ever and ever.
When the Doctor's run out of regenerations, he just gets some more.
Well, yeah, Moffat wrote it, got around that one, didn't he?
Yeah.
So, I can't remember how he did it now, but anyway.
Yeah, didn't the...
They give him a load more, didn't they, or something? I can't remember now.
Yeah, it was that Christmas episode, wasn't it? The crack in the wall.
I've only ever watched that once, and I was so drunk. Yeah, I know. I've never gone back to it because I didn't like it. In fact, we haven't reviewed it, so that'll be the next time I watch it.
Yeah, keep stum. Okie dokie. Anything you want to mention, mate, before we get on to our scores?
No, I don't think so. No.
Okay. I like the music in this one.
Yeah, I did as well, because I always assumed it was, because it's all stock music, so none of it was composed the actual series for the show. So, because the Cybermen theme is really iconic, isn't it, when they first doing the big drums and all that. Yeah. That's cool. It's good. Yeah.
Righty-o. I think it's you to go first, buddy.
It's me to go first. I'm going to give it an 8 out of 10.
An 8 out of 10?
8 out of 10. It could have been a 9 easily, I think, with a few little tweaks, but no, because of the things that I mentioned earlier, it's an 8.
Okie dokie. I am going to give it an 8 out of 10.
Oh, you're giving it an 8? Oh, cool.
Yes. I pretty much the same reasons as you, I think. It could have easily been a complete classic, a complete must-watch without any question, if the Cybermen were in it more and if Hartnell was in it more.
Doctor was in it more, yeah. Yeah.
One of them is a script thing with the Cybermen. The other thing with Hartnell, can't really complain too much because he wasn't very well, but it would have been nice to have him in it a bit more.
Yeah, I agree with you, mate.
Yeah.
But story-wise, it's very strong, which is why I've gone for an 8.
Yes.
I love the concept of it, and the Cybermen, everything's just fantastic.
I concur completely, yes. What did our listeners think, though? Let's kick off with an audio clip. This is Alex Kingdom.
Hello, going on with the Big Blue Box podcast. The 10th Planet, William Hartnell's regeneration story, is good. Not great, good. This is my first time watching this one. I watched it on Sunday. It's okay. First half, definitely stronger than the second half. For the fact that William Hartnell obviously fell ill in the second half of the story, randomly, actually. I don't know whether they gave a reason to why he fell ill. It's like, oh, my body's wearing thin, and that was the reason. The side characters, they're good. The Cybermen, good as well. It's all good. There's nothing that stands out to me. There's not one character that stands out or anything like that. It's solid entertainment. I watched the entire thing in one go, which I normally don't do with classics, but the 80 hours kind of the 80 hours, 80 minutes, sorry, went very, very quickly, which is a rough time of all four episodes put together. And I really You know, is that surely is a good sign. So I'm going to give it a 7.5 out of 10. Cheers, guys, and have a great rest of the show.
7.5.
Cheers, Alex. And something he said there, I don't know, it was just reminded me of something I didn't bring up in the review, actually. But something you said about you would have loved it if Capaldi had regenerated mid-series.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what's happened. Well, not mid-series, but so this is the second story in series 4 of Doctor Who. And that's when the Doctor bows out. So it's not the start of the series, it's not the end of the series. So second story in episode in series 4 is when the Doctor regenerated, and then Power of the Daleks is episode 3. And that's quite an unusual move, isn't it? And that's something you said that they should have done in the new
It's a nice twist. Series. Yeah. Thank you, Alex. Over on Twitter, Rick Moran said, a great story and a very scary introduction to the Cybermen. Michael Craze and Annika Will steal the show as Ben and Polly. A 9 out of 10.
Ooh, 9.
The TARDIS Files HQ says, an amazing story. For 1966, it feels really ahead of its time. Cybermen are great, and who doesn't love the design? Such a shame that episode 4 is missing, but thank goodness the regeneration scene survives from Blue Peter. 8 planets out of 10. Jordan Shortman, a great story. Everything about it is brilliant. The Cybermen are creepy as hell. The performances from the guest cast are good, and the main cast are on fire. Absolutely love the story. I wonder if the production team knew this would become a piece of history. 9 out of 10.
Yes.
Dayskin, I always get this wrong. I think it's Dayskin, says, the classic episode is just an absolute masterpiece. And can I just say, I feel they missed an opportunity on Christmas not linking the two Mondasian Cybermen in the Christmas special.
Yeah, maybe. I agree.
Yeah. Acting was fine, but as a last story for 12 era, 2 out of 10.
Is he talking about, Adventure, Twice Upon a Time?
Possibly. But he does say that Hartnell's his fave Doctor, or their fave Doctor. Sarah Louise Baggett, the Running Whovian, says, a brilliant story ahead of its time, with the concept of technology integrating with man, and I really find the Mondasian Cybermen the most eerie of all.
Yeah.
Great performances from Annika and Michael as Polly and Ben, and of course we get our first on-screen regeneration, an 8 out of 10.
Another 8, cool.
Yeah, thank you very much on Twitter. Our second audio clip, this is Sammy Satine.
G'day, Gary and Adam, Sammy Satine here. So, the 10th planet. Well, there were some Mondasian Cybermen in it. I am sure that Peter Capaldi would have loved this one. It's such a shame that the last part is animated, especially when we know they have the real footage of the regeneration. So, long, my dear First Doctor, but don't worry. One day you shall come back. Yes, you shall come back. Until then, there must be no tears and no anxieties. Just go forward in all your beliefs and prove to us that we are not mistaken in ours. That was from the Dalek Invasion of Earth speech. I reworded it slightly. Anyway, see ya.
See ya.
Sammy.
Did she give us a score?
I don't think so.
Sammy, I want to know how many Mondasian Cybermen's out of 10.
Yeah.
I'm going to assume it was an 8.
Bring in the facts, though. Bring in the skills. As always. Over on Facebook, Kevin Mullen says, it's a fairly mediocre story that is elevated by the introduction of the Cybermen and the concept of regeneration. The Cybermen are at their most disturbing, as we see what they're not far removed from us. Ben and Polly are great at times, carrying a lot of the story. 6 out of 10. He says, interesting fact, the costume worn by Bosk in The Empire Strikes Back is the same as the spacesuits featured in this story.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
I knew that.
Anyone that doesn't know who Bosk is, there's a scene in The Empire Strikes Back where Darth Vader's gathered a load of bounty hunters to go after the Millennium Falcon. And Bosk is like the lizard, reptilian-looking bounty hunter in the... So they were yellow.
It's yellow. Yeah, I was going to say it was yellow, wasn't it? Yeah.
Holy crap. I didn't know that.
I suppose you didn't know that. You do now.
Yes. And Kevin also goes on to say, what is great, though, is when the Doctor leaves the base, there is one final story for him before he regenerates. A story that finally gives the First Doctor his farewell. I think he's referring to Twice Upon a Time.
Yeah.
Possibly, yeah. Martin Arnold says, not long to go now, folks. I can't wait. Anyway, sometimes Classic Who just nails it with their monster design. These otherwise creaky old designs have an otherworldly retro charm that's quite alien and evocative. So it is the Mondasian Cybermen, which is a great story, only let down by the obvious and unfortunate health problems that forced Bill out of the show into television history and the hearts of young Time Lords everywhere, some of whom would one day walk in eternity in his footsteps. A unique farewell to a unique character, both the man and the character. That's really nice, Martin.
Yeah, it's nice.
Really nice,
yeah.
Thank you. Lewis Palmer says, one of my all-time favourites, a brilliant way to say goodbye to one of the very best Doctors. It's a rollicking story with a fast pace, great and memorable characters, and the villains are creepy as sin. The Cybermen are brilliant in this, with an amazing design and an awesome backstory. The animation for Episode 4 is also the best that's been done, in my opinion, and blends seamlessly with the original footage. Overall, it's an amazing story that I return to. 9 out of 10.
Cheers, Lewis.
Aaron Ball says, I think it's great. It's a shame Hartnell was ill, so he couldn't do as much, but his performance was great. Ben and Polly are really underrated. Shame the episodes are missing, but the Cybermen are very creepy, and I love the design. Some really good side characters as well. 9 out of 10. Gavrik Sawyer says, absolutely stellar. I read the Target novelization recently, and it reminded me just how terrifying the Cybermen were on their debut. The plot is such a wonderful weave into the Cybermen's history. It's just perfectly linking story for Hartnell and Troughton's eras. A 10 out of 10.
10? Wowzers.
Miles McKenzie, can't believe the next review will be for Series 11.
I know.
Yay.
Exciting.
10th Planet had a nice, simple story with the introduction to a great villain, which made the story even better for me. Shame about the lack of Hartnell for his final story, but that's more down to his illness. The regeneration at the end would have bamboozled the audience back in 1966, which remains very iconic to this day. Overall, 7.5.
Okay.
And lastly, Jason Thayer, very short and sweet, an excellent send-off. Ben does a great job as the companion. 8 out of 10.
Another 8, yes. Same
another 8. Anything over on the Geek's Handbag page?
Yeah, I had a couple. So Patrick Sherwood just says, cool, I love it. It's an 8 out of 10 from Patrick. Jason Howe says it's his favourite First Doctor story with the original, true and best Cybermen. Bradley Willard says, a very good send-off for Hartnell, despite the fact the story isn't actually about him. Cybermen are represented in an incredibly sinister fashion here and definitely make an entrance to remember. That's true. Annika Wills and Michael Craze are great as supporting cast and give compelling performances, even if the behind-the-scenes problems involving Hartnell threaten to tear the whole thing to shreds. And although the regeneration is only written in quickly during the development of the story, it's still very well executed. So a very good story, 8 out of 10 from Bradley, same as us. And finally, Charlie Turner says, a very good send-off for Hartnell. It's just an insult to him and us Whovians that the final part, except for the regeneration scene, is missing. But the animation is great, so I can kind of forgive it. Cybermen are creepy and great. Cybermen are creepy and great. Used to be not a fan of their voice, but it's grown on me. One of my favourite Hartnells, and he gives this a 9 out of 10. And he asks if we'll be reviewing Power of the Daleks animation. One day, Charlie, yes, one day.
One day.
We shall review it.
We will. Thank you so much, guys, for all of your thoughts and opinions, etc. I think overall really positive for that one. Probably an 8 is the average score.
Yeah.
I would say. So that's very, very cool. Next week.
It's arrived. Hurrah.
It's arrived. Pretty obvious, Adam, but what yes. are we going to be reviewing next week?
So, yes, we have the Chibbers has allowed us to have an episode title at last, and it will be the start of Series 11, where The Woman Who Fell to Earth.
Interesting. Is that a literal title or a metaphoric title? Probably both.
I'm really intrigued to see how they get. How is that cliffhanger going to play out?
I don't know. Can't wait, though. Can't wait.
She better not land on, like, a, I don't know, on a trampoline or something. And just, it better be a good conclusion, Chibbers. It better not be one of these fake, like, oh, my God, how's she going to get out of that? And then she just lands on a washing line and gets up. And, you know, it needs to be good.
It does. Oh, absolutely. Yeah, lots riding on it.
Yeah.
No pressure, Chippers, but...
No.
You know, you've kind of got the world whipped up into a bit of a frenzy. Better deliver. So the woman who fell to earth will be our review. So if you're listening to this on Friday when the podcast goes out, that episode will be just in a couple of days on the Sunday, which is cool. And our reviews will be sort of a week late, if you like. Not late, but a week after they go out, which is kind of cool in a way because we get to watch it a few times. Because you and I, we do watch it at least twice, don't we, the new ones?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So we get to watch them a few times and properly get our thoughts and feelings down. And it's not one of those knee-jerk reviews where we watch it and then within an hour it's like, oh, this is amazing, the best thing ever. And then after you've watched it a couple of times, it's like, yeah. Which it could well be the best thing ever, I'm not sure. But it's nice that the dust settles for a little bit and then our reviews trickle out sort of, you know, just under a week later. So
yeah,
next week will be our review of The Woman Who Fell to Earth. And I think we'll do there. For 204.
All right.
Thank you, thank you. Thank you so much for sticking with us for 204. News was essentially series 11 stuff. A couple of cool bits of merch if you're into that. And congrats to our competition winners, Dean and Christopher. I will be in touch to sort out your stuff. So welcome aboard the TARDIS and the Five Doctors soundtrack. It's awesome. If you've not listened to it, it's on everything, isn't it? It's on like Spotify, iTunes.
Yeah.
The whole lot. So yeah, enjoy the soundtrack, fellas. And we will have another giveaway coming up some point in the next month, I would say. Month, maybe 6 weeks, we'll have another cool thing or things to give away. So we will let you
remember.
If we remember, that is, of course, yeah. Next week, the start of series 11. It's going to be awesome. Hopefully, it looks like it's going to be a good one. So we'll be on that. So don't worry. In the meantime, listen to all of our previous shows on our website, www.bigblueboxpodcast.co.uk. There's also buttons there to link off to all of the social stuff. And Adam and I chat plenty of Doctor Who in between shows during the week. So go off to Facebook, Twitter and Instagram. Give us a like and a follow on there. And join in the conversation. We've got loads of really cool listeners and Who fans in the community. So lots of chat always going on. There's also buttons there to head off to the various podcast networks so you can subscribe to us there so you don't miss a show when that lands every Friday morning. And there's a big button for iTunes. If you're an iTunes listener, if you could spare a minute for a review and a rating, that would be amazing because it really, really helps us lots. Also, check out Adam's channel, The Geek's Handbag. Over on YouTube, just do a search for The Geek's Handbag. Tons of really cool videos there, reviews, unboxings, location videos, convention roundups, on the spot, just loads of cool stuff. So give Adam a sub and a follow on there. And he's also on all the social stuff, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram.
Insta, yep.
Go and follow him, it's all good. Until next week, enjoy Series 11. My name's Gary.
My name's Adam.
And remember,